I think we see some of the complexities coming down the road. We look at the, John, a fragmentation may be a good word of trying to incorporate some of this technology and into the industry and usable tools. And the NBCEC, led by Dr. Pollack, had the foresight to really just try to step up and take an aggressive approach to try to pull together the different segments of our industry, the research community, the breed associations, the companies that have done a lot of research and now commercializing these tests, USDA, ARS, and their resources, and trying to develop a strategy to really take the next step in implementing this technology in the industry. And he asked Dr. Mike Tess from Montana State University to lead a commission that's made up of representatives from each of those groups and to try to develop a strategy to implement genomics into beef cattle selection. We've asked Mike, who has led a couple of meetings thus far, to come and share the thoughts of those meetings and kind of the futuristic look of some of the needs the industry really needs to consider as we move forward and try to prepare the industry down the road. So, Dr. Tess? I think they're trying to record off of this one, perhaps, so we may need to use that one if we can.
I'm using an antiquated computer. And I copied one of the jump drive, and it doesn't want to recognize all the stuff on the other computer. So I'm not quite sure what to do about that before. You can try that if you need a little option. I think I'll do it.
What I've been doing for the past few months and why,
and then I'm going to try to give you my view of what I've learned about kind of where we are in the genomics
business and where we might go in terms of incorporating these into selection tools. In late November, I think it was, John called me and asked me to lead a commission on establishing better scientific standards for the validation of markers. NBCEC has been validating markers using data from the Carcass Merit Project. Dick Quast has done a lot of that work. But that's been a validation of opportunity because there was a data set that seemed to be usable for the kind of markers that were being developed, but something that would reach into the future and be more sustainable was needed, and really there is no really set kind of standards for what validation means and how it should happen. And so John asked me if I would lead a commission to come up with some sort of suggested standard. After soaking on that for a few weeks, I said I would. The first thing I did is meet with various groups that are shown here during the NCBA meetings. I met with the DNA companies and the breeds and the NBC Commission on Validation, or their Committee on Validation, and did learn a tremendous amount about where things are. And I went home and soaked on that a while, and I said, "Well, I better write John, tell him what I think." And the more I thought about it, the more I came to the conclusion that validation just wasn't enough, and that's where I got in trouble, because John, after he read what I sent him, agreed, and we've started down a little broader path. Last week, John and I went to Australia.
and participated in the Smart Gene Workshop, which is a grant funded by the state of Queensland to incorporate 12 markers, actually 4 markers for each of 3 traits, feed efficiency, tenderness, and marbling, into Australian what we would call EPDs. They call them estimated breeding values. And so that was the topic of that conference. It was a 2-day conference, and again, I learned some more there. And then, as Bill mentioned, this Wednesday, we brought together a small group of leaders of the industry representing the genomic companies, the breed associations, USDA, ARS, and a few of the experiment stations to see if we could come up with a partnership, if you will, a team approach to making this technology a usable tool in the industry. And so I'll try to outline that. Currently, we have 3 companies marketing genetic tools for selection in this country. I have no way of predicting how many more might show up on the scenes in the years to come. We have several different kinds of markers. We have markers that are used to identify parents. We have markers that are used in traceability. They're essentially a genetic ID tag, if you will, in my mind. We have some markers coming on the scenes that are really used for management. The purpose of the marker is to really predict the future phenotype on the same animal. And potentially could be a sorting tool in the feed yard or whatever. These have a tremendous upside, but that's none of those markers is really the focus of what I want to talk about today. I'd really like to talk to you about just markers that are useful as potential selection tools, markers that will predict future progeny performance and be useful to make genetic change. And so that's the focus of what I'll talk about. Not to discount the importance of any of the others, that's just what we're going to focus on here. It seems to me that DNA markers are evolving rapidly. We've gone from just having 1 or 2 genes or loci, if you will, that were in a test, to now many loci on the test, to panels of loci. And Jerry has talked twice today about whole genome scans, which potentially will represent tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of SNPs on a single chip. And so the horizon is changing rapidly. But it seems to me that one thing that I've picked up, and if I'm not mistaken, is that often the way this the information from these panels will be communicated is in some sort of score. I think that will be to our advantage, really, in the future. So as I hinted before, as I've kind of struggled with this issue, my conclusion has been that, you know, validation is important. Assessing these markers in different populations and environments is really important. But if that's all we do, we haven't really done enough to apply the technology in the industry. If that's as far as we go, we won't really get it done in the industry, and we have to do something more than that to help the producer. So my thinking went something like this. What is really the goal of why have we done this? Why has the United States invested so much money in molecular genetic research? And what does the U.S. beef industry and the consuming public really expect to benefit from these technologies? And I would suggest to you that, at least from the selection point of view, that the goal is to produce tools that more efficiently produce a genetic change. We need to ask for DNA technologies that can achieve more rapid speed, give us lower costs, more control, and more choices. And somehow we need to establish a system of using this technology that's flexible enough to accommodate the future somehow. Because I think it's very possible we could build a system that would incorporate the information we have today, that 5 years from now is such an antique it's not usable because the technology is changing so rapidly. And that's, you know, I'm probably not smart enough to answer that question. I'm sure I'm not.
But that is something to consider. So the question at hand for today, where the industry is today, is how do we make most effective use of the sources of information about breeding value that we have? We have some DNA markers out there. We have phenotypes and pedigrees that we've been collecting and using for several decades now. But these things are not independent. The information that we get in a pedigree, the information that we get in phenotype or a progeny test, that's not independent of the information that's on the DNA marker. There's some overlap there. How much overlap, I can't tell you. I don't think anybody can. And so that's part of the quantity. So I would suggest to you that just like the European Union has tried to make business more efficient by having a common currency, we need to try to make animal selection or beef cattle selection more efficient by having a common currency that we can trade with that has to do with selection. So I'm kind of a pictorial thinker sometimes, and so if you'll let me let this green box, if you will, the length of that box be represent two breeding things. Or it would be the accuracy of a breeding value estimate that's based upon thousands of progeny, where we have a very accurate estimate of the breeding value. Okay? So in terms of the information in pedigree and phenotypes, we might have, say, a yearling bull or a calf to have a few phenotypes maybe collected on that individual itself and pedigree information. But all that together gives us a estimate of breeding value that has a very low accuracy. That would be that small one. If that animal is used as a sire and produces thousands of progeny, like a bull out of one of the bull studs, then we accumulate many more phenotypes in there, and the accuracy of that breeding value increases until it approaches the true breeding value. And we know pretty well what that animal can do. Well, in sort of the same way DNA markers are that way. Some markers are based upon a few loci, and they will explain a small portion of the variation. So the accuracy associated with the breeding value prediction from that marker is small. It's useful, but it's still small. Someday, you know, maybe whole genome scans is that someday, we have the potential to explain a tremendous amount of the variation with the information contained or derived from these SNP chips and other DNA technologies. And we can rival very accurate breeding values produced from progeny tests the same way. But putting those two together, we can do a better job of predicting breeding value accurately at an earlier age. For example, if this were, you know, a yearling bull without any DNA information, but just pedigree information, maybe its own phenotype, and this is maybe one of the new markers. Maybe together, if we incorporate those together, we can have an animal that can sell at a year of age with accuracy values that are significantly higher than they are today. And as the DNA markers get better and better and better, that accuracy value for that young animal gets better and better as well. So what I think we need, and this is not rocket science, this is not new, I'm not the one that thought of this first. We need a single estimate of breeding value that's based upon all the information available, whether it be DNA scores, pedigrees, and phenotypes, and a single measure of accuracy that goes with it. And that will give us higher accuracy values earlier in life. So what I'd like to do is go through a table, if you will, that represents the kind of information we might get in the field from breeders and producers. And so when I say phenotypes up there, I'm saying that what if we have traits that are like weaning weight now, that producers regularly collect that data and submit that to a breeder organization. Same sort of thing over here. We can have markers collected or assayed in the field, and the owners of the cattle can submit that data to a common organization there. So we'll start out with the simple cell, where we have some traits, we won't have either kind of information. So, you know, maybe it's like tenderness.
You know, it's important, but we don't really have a regular way, an efficient way of collecting data in the field.
That's not a good example.
Let me wipe that off, back that up. Let's think of something else.
Say disease resistance.
Surely there's genetic variation there if we could find it. But we don't have a way of measuring it
yet, but maybe we will someday.
Now think about this step. For traits that we do have phenotypes, but we don't yet have markers for.
What do we do with those?
Well, we've been doing that for decades. We combine those pedigree
information with phenotypic information in something we call genetic evaluation, and we produce an EPD. So that's nothing new.
Well, another type of common currency, if you will, is the idea that
we've got EPDs produced by many different breed associations.
And that creates a sense of confusion as well, because they're not exactly comparable. And so another way of producing a common currency is to use a cross-breed EPDs or a multi-breed EPD system where we put all the data together. And that, that's really the basis of why we have an NBCDC, isn't it, John?
I mean, that was one of the goals of NBCDC, is to produce a true multi-breed evaluation system. So, now, what about traits that have no phenotypes available, but we do have markers? And I think now tenderness might be an example there, or we have some genetic markers there, but we don't have a regular system of collecting phenotypes. What do we do with them?
Well, here's part of the problem. We've got three companies, maybe four or five in the future, all producing a test result that gives some indication of an animal's merit for that trait. But all three scores are produced in different units. And they probably don't all contain the same information, but they can contain some of the same information. There's some overlap among them as well.
But how do we stack a pedigree when animals in the ancestors have all different kinds of combinations of this information? Some of them have scores from one company, some of them have scores from all three companies, some of them don't have any scores.
How do we put that?
Yeah, how do we consider mating plans where we're trying to match animals to produce outstanding progeny when we don't have common measures for both of them? So we need some way of translating this information to make it more useful to the breeder.
Here I've coined a word that's probably not unique. I tried not to tread on anybody's country here, and please don't let the language be the obstacle. It's just we need some way of explaining what I think needs to happen.
Maybe there's a better word, but I'll call it molecular translation. We need some way of translating the predictions of breeding value that are contained in these marker tests that we have today to get them in a common currency so we can compare them and use them. Okay. So I'll call those EPDs and I'll put an M on to just indicate that the information source is molecular or markers. So the final point of the cell is some traits that we have even today, like marbling, where we have phenotypes that can be collected and reported to a breed associate, but we also have marker information as well. Well, by extension, we just need to do both processes at the same time. We need to translate all that information into a common EPD, and I'll label that with marker-assisted EPD. You can call it what you want, but the idea is we've tried to meld all the information together. And so what we end up is for each of these types of traits, we get an EPD, something that's
in the same units and hopefully measured the accuracy the same way. So we can easily
compare them. So how do we get there? So what I'd like to do is suggest to you a roadmap.
There may be
better ideas. I've shared this with this group that Bill mentioned. We met on Wednesday, of a roadmap how we might get there. And statistics, that's just one part of the problem, as I think I'll hope to be able to explain to you. So part of the road that we need to travel is this idea of validation and assessment. So on all the slides that are going to follow, I have a couple more diagrams like this. This, I don't know if you can see colors from where you are, that's sort of a brown, but that hashed mark represents pedigrees and phenotypes. The red dotted lines represent tissue samples or DNA. The blue dashed line represents scores, you know, the results that the companies have will produce. And a solid black line just represents information. So let's define the terms. Validation, to me, implies some sort of independent verification that the DNA markers do have a relationship with the trait that they're supposed to have. And it measures it in, you know, how much effect. It would be nice, it'd be most useful if we could identify what effects they have in several different breeds and crosses, so if we know that this marker has the same effect in, say, Boss Indicus cattle as it does English breed cattle. It would also be nice to know if that works in different environments, especially if they're traits on measured on cows rather than feedlot cattle. We have so many different kinds of environments. Someday it would certainly be nice to do that. We need to standardize the procedures. We need to give some boundaries to the kind of statistics that should be used. We need to have some standards by which we say this is validated and this is not. So far, that really doesn't. Those haven't been defined. Assessment is a term that I got the word from John because I've heard him use this. But assessment is the idea that we need to understand not only the relationships among the markers from the different companies for the same trait, but we need to have an idea of, do these markers have some effect on other traits that are really not the target? If we select for marbling using a DNA marker, is it going to change anything else? And that's this idea of assessment. Reference populations. The validations that have been done by NCBCEC today have largely used the Carcass Merit Project data. So they were able to harvest information from existing data. And hopefully that'll always be true, that as markers are produced and asked to be validated, we can find existing data that the states or the government has already paid for to be collected that has some usefulness in this validation process. But it seems to me it's unlikely that that will work for everything. Very unlikely. So we'll need actual live animals, ongoing herds that are designed and maintained to meet this need.
Who's going to own those cattle? It's impossible for me to envision this without the federal government being involved somewhere, because they just have so much more resources than the states do.
There's really not very many experiment stations left that have pedigreed populations of animals that are maintained on a regular basis. But a few do, and hopefully they can contribute to that. For some traits, we may have sufficient quality of data in large private herds that might be useful for validation as well. These herds need to represent different breeds and different production environments. So back to this little drawing. This model is very similar to what has been done with NBCEC and the companies today, except for this side over here. What these dark arrows I mean to represent there is that I think there's opportunity and really a need that in the future that the companies need to be able to contribute data that they collected on their own when they've done their own validation process, or using populations that were not used in the discovery process of markers, but in the as a validation step, that they could contribute that to some agency, much like
drug companies submit data to the FDA as a way to say, you know, here's what we've done, these are our procedures, these are our statistics, can this contribute viable information to the validation process? So I'll call that external validation. The internal validation is much like what's been done with NBCEC today, that from we have tissue on a reference population, that tissue is communicated to the DNA companies. They run the lab analyses, derive their scores or their genotypes or whatever the case might be, and communicate that down. It has been NBCEC, and NBCEC then takes that and along with the pedigree and performance information from the reference population and does the statistics to do the validation and puts that on their website. So something like that needs to continue in the future that has both an internal validation as well as an external piece that's as part of the puzzle.
Why don't they flow back to the reference population?
What do you want to flow back?
The information. I mean, I assume the reference population would be like the associated.
No, what I mean is that it's either existing data sets that can include tissue and pedigree and performance or existing herds that, say, Clay Center might maintain.
Okay.
If that's not clear, I'll try again later.
Okay.
All right. All right, so what's the rest of the puzzle? Now, this part of the diagram is what I've just shown, and I've just shrunk it down, all right? So now I'm going to, let's try to walk through the rest of it.
I'll try to talk this way so you can hear me rather than talk to that screen.
But what I've tried to outline here is a system or a concept, at the least, by which we could take data that is currently being collected, and that could be collected, put it in a common source and produce a multi-breed genetic evaluation that produces EPDs.
Okay.
So again, the brown line, if you can see those, that's just
phenotypes and pedigrees that come not only from the breeders and producers that are linked to the breed associations, but the reference populations themselves.
And that would go to, and currently that data goes to the breed associations, and they maintain it. Now, these blue lines represent scores or genotypes that the companies have produced from cattle that they have genotyped for the breeders and producers of.
So when they genotype the cattle, they send the results not only back to the owners of the cattle, but we have to have some way in which those scores get to a common database.
And that's what this blue line here is meant to represent.
Then the phenotypic data and the DNA data is used by whoever is going to compute these multi-breed genetic evaluations.
I can't tell you who that's going to be either. All I know is I've been told several times that the universities are going to get out of that business.
I want to say that the first deadline is December of 2008, but at the latest it's going to be 2010. Is that right? Anybody?
Somewhere in there.
So I guess the message that I understand from them is that they don't want to continue producing the genetic evaluations. And this is liable to be privatized by one company, I guess.
All right? So whoever that's going to be, they're going to digest this data,
and they will be the ones that actually compute these molecular translations that I've called them and the genetic evaluations that produce those EPDs in that table that I showed you.
Now, down here, what we've got, this information that's transmitted from
one agency to the decision support system is just those EPDs, all right? And then the decision support, of which NBCC is working on, is a way of presenting this data to users that helps them make breeding decisions. And I've listed some of the users that I think would find this information useful up there.
The final piece of the puzzle is education.
When I met with several people, one of the most frequent things that I was told is that, Mike, what our clients need is help. We need help understanding this. And I think, if we're honest, we all need help understanding this because we don't speak the same language.
and pity the poor rancher in Montana that has never gone to school and whatever. How's he supposed to understand what all this is? We gotta help him do that. And
I think NBCC will be up to that challenge as they have in the past.
Now, this database, and that kind of raises the red flag to people, because how are they going to get that accomplished? Well, I don't have the answers to that, but it's something that has to happen. So we have to come up with some way in which data from the reads can be communicated to a common place, and the genotype information, the DNA information, has to be created too. And we need to create some incentives for producers to submit that data. Maybe the incentive will be limiting access to the data to only the producer and the agency to do the EPD. I don't know. There may be other
incentives on there, but that has to be worked out.
Maybe the greatest incentive for this to work is if we can actually put it together and get a prototype started. If Art and I are running, selling bulls in the same county, selling here and bulls in the same county, and Art is using DNA markers on his bulls that he's selling, and I'm not, and he's able to have sell bulls with significant higher accuracy than I can, my guess is his clients will pay more for those bulls than they'll pay for money. And maybe that will provide
some significant pull through the system to get this information in there as well. So how do we make all that happen? That's kind of the scary part for me.
But I think the only way it can happen is with a team approach. There's not one person that I can think of, there's not one company, and there's not one agency that by their own will and resources can put this together. I could be wrong, but I just don't think that exists. And so somehow or another, we've got to come together and do this. On Wednesday, that was sort of the purpose of the meeting we had Wednesday, was sort of lay out this possible roadmap and say, well, what do you think? And I was really personally encouraged by the response of all the companies, each company that was represented there said, yeah, we'll help with this reference population idea, and the USDA gave a voice of said, yes, let's go. And so I felt really encouraged by that. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. I could be deceived, but I think there's a chance that this might work. So a suggested action plan would be, for me, I think we need to kind of pick out the plan and work on some of the components. We don't get things done by putting 30 people in a room and get them to decide something. You got to make this committee smaller to work on that. And so I would suggest that we work as one piece on the reference population. We put the people together that are going to have a stake in that and actually be doing it. So that would be the experimentation stations, ARS, and the breed associations, and consultations with the genomic companies, so we make sure that what we get out of those populations is what we need to get out of. And catalog the existing data that could be used. We'll use reinventing things that are already collected,
but design new herds that will do the job in the future. On the validation and the assessment,
we've already asked several scientists that they would help us with that, but we need some very good statisticians to be involved. But we also really can't solve this until we know kind of something about how those reference populations are going to be structured
and how that might work, so we can build something that's compatible with that. Who's going to do the validation?
I don't think I know. NBCEC has done that.
You know, who will be responsible for that in the future? That'll have to be worked out. But we have to standardize the procedures. We need to accommodate external as well as internal data. And we'll need to figure out how expensive that's going to be for those using the process. On a national
database, you know, the obvious players are the breed associations, NBCC,
Certainly, the genomic companies expressed a unanimous willingness to transmit the data if their customers agree to it. They don't own the data once the genotypes have been constructed. But we need to create some incentive for people to contribute their data to a common database. We need to develop software not only to complete the multi-breed genetic evaluation using pedigrees and phenotypes, but a multi-breed molecular translation, if you will, of these scores
and other DNA tools that are currently available. And we need to have in mind that the end user of this is going to be a private company.
The decision support needs to be put together in mind with a view for who's going to use it. And so the clients that the companies have now can find value in this, what's provided there. The breed associations, their breeders and producers can find value in that, as well as
other potential users. And I think NBCEC will do a good job on that, as they will do the education component as well.
The final piece of the puzzle that I think we need is that, you know, if this commission that I'm supposed to be involved with really lives and moves forward, is that we need to ask a small group of people that are familiar with not only benchtop research and statistics, but people that are familiar with that kind of have their fingers on the pulse of the beef issue. We need to kind of look down the road and try to do the best job we can of seeing what the future might hold, so that we don't build an antique that is useless just a couple of years down the road.
The roles for the NBCEC are much like they're doing now. They're currently developing genetic evaluation software. We need to, you know, if this is a goal, I'm sure that they'll work on this. And
I think that especially when the DNA information is transmitted in scores,
I think we have several options to make that translation possible. NBCEC is currently working on decision support software. They have an education committee. They are working on new traits like helpfulness. John's talked about that yesterday. Who does the validation and assessment?
They are currently doing that. Maybe that
will or will not be their role in the future.
Well, the commission lives, what should the commission do? As I see it, the useful thing that we might do is facilitate meetings of these various groups, encourage them to meet. You know, it's nice to have a meeting with 30 people in the room, and everybody says, yeah, that's a good idea. We'll come back next year. Well, everybody comes back next year, they have Sunday. And so we need somebody that kind of is an irritation in the system that makes things happen and then communicates what's going on. So, again, if the commission lives, I would review that this is not just Mike that does this, but we ask people smarter than me to join sort of a leadership team to give guidance to the commission and maybe form a committee that work on each of the
components. There's not enough hours in the day for me to attend all those things. So, for today's meeting, I think one important question, Bill, is what role should DIF play in this process?
Now, I guess if they don't think it's a good idea, they don't need to play any role. But if you all think that this is worthy of pursuing, maybe DIF is the appropriate organization to kind of give some guidance to the program, because it is the peak improvement federation. And this is all about making tools that are more useful for peak improvement.
So, that's for you all to decide.
Finally, you know, I think just about all of us in here have some stake in this. You know, we've produced a tremendous amount of genetic research over the last half century or more, and the government has spent a tremendous amount of money funding this. The companies have put a lot of money in what they've done. But the amount of confusion that exists in the industry about this technology is growing, it's not shrinking. If we don't come up with some common currency to put all these tools together into one common thing, then our credibility, and who knows, will be, you know, we all could lose, and I can't predict who will be the biggest losers, but many of us could lose it. If we don't address this problem, I think we risk taking a big step backwards before we take a step forward. So with that, I'll be quiet.
Mike, any questions for Mike, comments that might be asked for the role of EIF might play, for example? We look at some of the results of the survey that commercial producers, Mike, I think it's safe to say, they don't want to understand that math yet.
No, they have no interest in that.
They want an end product that they have confidence in and the decision-making field. So how do we get there? How do we push forward? Any questions for Mike?
Bruce? I just made a philosophical comment. This is exactly where the industry was 40 years ago when the CIF had that first meeting. There was no standardization on how green waste was dealt with. This is exactly the same thing. In other words, different organizations were processing, they calculated the different ages, different ages of land adjustments. So the information was limited. Was that the same position now with a different challenge? So I'm curious to see if he had any support for the organization.
Yeah, well, I just have a question, just a clarification. Mike, your commission is a component of NBCC?
Well, I'm sort of a man without a country sometimes. I don't know. I mean, John asked me to do this, but yet it's awkward for NBCC because, you know, they're one of the pieces of the pie, you know. I just don't know how to what to make it better, Jim. I feel a little self-conscious being called the leader of this commission. I don't know what qualifies me to do that. But I think the task needs to be done, whether I lead it or somebody better than me does that or not.
I asked John to comment on his thoughts. A couple of months ago, when we did call Mike to speak at a meeting of our advisors, and same frustration that I think we're all feeling relative to moving forward in small steps for the existing advisory council. That's it. We said, yeah, judges. And so we decided that we would take a step by putting together a group of people somewhat independent of us. And somebody's got a part of it. Unfortunately, we called by and said, go by and get to the budget. It's really obvious to me in this meeting of all the people and all the different organizations that are represented there. Maybe it's easy to catch up there alongside of them, but we're out there as part of the solution. We've got to have the ability to point to us that we've got to do this and not have to worry about the fact that sort of this is the time, however. So we are going to try and move into the whole thing under the different umbrella of guidance and address.
So I think with that in mind, I mean, you know, this part brought up a really good point about the way this would have been done 40 years ago, and whether we want to go back 40 years and say, you know, because the committees used to have play a major role. I mean, they would make motions; those motions would be carried forward to the board, and the board would take action. And I saw Laura Rose. Laura, would it be appropriate for this committee to make a motion to accept? Dr. Jess's plan, so to speak, or outline for a plan, and this become a component of the EIF Emerging Technologies Committee, so to speak.
And I think one of the things, Jim, just touch on, we have met, I mean, with a subgroup of looking at EIF and kind of the long-range planning mode. I mean, really, is this what you describe, what this committee, what all these committees need to be doing in DIF? And I think the other thing is we discussed the fact that it was actually bringing this commission, the potential of bringing this commission is kind of another subset of the committee of DIF, the Emerging Technologies. So I think the motion would be very appropriate.
So moved.
I copied that off the BIM program.
Then it become, and that basically become a component of the Emerging Technologies Committee. That's perfect. Any other questions or discussion? Take a voice poll, I guess. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You have a motion out of committee. Well, again, we appreciate Mike's efforts on this, and he's put in a lot of time and efforts. And let's give him a hand for. Our next presentation is kind of, again, looking at some new technology, some new trade, really, that we have never explored the opportunities that might exist.